and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports. And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
But he has a shock in store for him. He has two great chances, Slim and None, and Slim's out of town.
Pedro Fernandez.
I wanted to do the right thing.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, live emanating from the Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco, California. Check it! This is Ring Talk. Often imitated but never duplicated, 37, make that 38 plus years now. I'm knocking out all bums. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. My name is Pedro Fernandez. I am your modest host, of course, also an award-winning writer, won a few awards for my writing, as well as a four-time Golden Glove champion. And back in the days when boxing was hot, the Golden Gloves were hot. Of course, boxing, not the hottest sport in the world as far as the United States is concerned. And why is that? Because there's too many guys here playing internet games. Too many guys here, like, doing stuff with their phones and this kind of stuff. They don't get out and do anything physical anymore. In fact, you got to look to poor countries as far as boxing is concerned. You want to talk about boxers coming out of the rough? You're still looking at Mexico. You're still looking at, of course, the USSR, the former Soviet Union. I mean, look at all the fighters coming across there. Sergey Kovalev, Gennady Golovkin, of course, the Klitschko brothers. I can go on and on. The bottom line is, American boxing is not what it used to be. But in this segment of Ring Talk, in this edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, I'm going to give you an inside look into some other spots of boxing that you might not know about. How about the Mafia taking a hit out on Don King? Sammy the Bull Gravano. Remember him? John Gotti's right-hand man, the guy that killed like better than 20 people? Yeah, well, he talks about killing Don King. We'll get to that in segment two. Of course, later in the show, we'll hear from the King himself. Don King, the wire-haired wonder, 89 years old now, talking Christmas. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, and the brand-new SiriusXM satellite radio channel, channel 217. This is Ring Talk.
That's America, Pedro. Sports Byline. Hey, baby.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
What you see is what you get. What you see is what you get. Donald King, born August 20th, 1931. Of course, an American boxing promoter. Born in Cleveland, Ohio. Went to John Adams High School. Graduated in 1951. Pretty good student. Dropped out of Kent State University. Before the Kent State shootings, obviously. But he dropped out of Kent State University, of course, and started an illegal gambling club in the basement of a record store. And the bottom line is he was semi-successful in Cleveland, became the number one bookie, the number one numbers guy in the whole nine yards. And people say to me, what is the numbers, Pedro? Well, the numbers are sort of like an illegal lottery. What I mean by that is the numbers will be like the first four races at Hollywood Park. In other words, Hollywood Park being that horse track down there, horse racing track down there in Southern California, LA. In other words, like, if number one won the first race and number two won the second race and number three won the third race and number four won the fourth race, you had one, two, three, four, you'd win the numbers for that day. So that's sort of like the illegal lottery that Don King made $1 zillion off of course. Then he took his money, invested in the sport of boxing, but didn't really invest his money per se. What he did was he got a couple of guys to get together and put Muhammad Ali in a boxing exhibition for a hospital. And they put this hospital boxing exhibition together. And of course, then, you know, Muhammad was an easy con. I mean, not because I knew him or because I was able to con him or anything like that, but guys that I know were able to get over him. Don King got over on Muhammad Ali more than once. In fact, I think he got over him for better than $2.5 or $3 million for the Larry Holmes fight, of course, the slaughter, October 2nd, 1980, in Caesar's Palace, in which Ali was humiliated and pummeled for 10 rounds before Angelo Dundee said he had enough and wouldn't let Ali come out for the 11th round. But Ali was supposed to get $8 million for that fight. He got $4 million, and then he told me, maybe he didn't get the whole $4 million. So he didn't get paid on that one, of course. Don King, known for not paying people, much like Donald Trump, of course, his political compatriot,
course, both those guys have been sued, and they've won some and lost a whole lot more than they won. But when you look at Don King's career, I mean, Muhammad Ali, of course, he started off with Ali and Foreman. He did the first fight ever. He went to the jungle. He got these guys, he got the president of Zaire, a president Mobutu, to invest $6 million in this fight. And Mobutu was convinced that Don King would turn his country into like Disneyland, and people wanted the French Riviera, and that people wanted to go over to Zaire, Africa, and because it was such a vacation hotspot, and it was just a place in the jungle. Nobody wanted to go there. So anyway, they set up this fight. Ali and Foreman, of course, Ali and Foreman, he get down the rumble in the jungle. Don King uses none of his own money. He gets other people's money to do this. He's basically broke going into this. I mean, he's got a couple of bucks getting out of jail in the early 70s, 73, 74, but not a lot of money. So he's using other people's money, something he did real well. So he puts together this deal. Ali and Foreman in the jungle, they're both getting a couple and a half. I think they're both guaranteed $2.5 million each, something like that. But he got Mobutu to put up the $6 million. Of course, that bankrupt the country. The country was never the same after that. Now I think it's known as the African Congo, but it was formerly Zaire. Anyway, they put together this fight. Ali, Foreman, the rumble in the jungle, the biggest fight of all time. Muhammad Ali's going to get destroyed. I mean, I remember watching that fight and Ali going to the ring saying to myself, I didn't pray or anything like that. I said to myself, you just sort of like shake your head and like you hope for the best and expect the worst. And then here's Ali like taking George Foreman to school and eating up all his big punches and all this kind of stuff. I'm saying to myself, this is not going the way I thought it was going. I mean, you want Ali to win. I wanted Ali to win, but I didn't think he was going to be able to win against George Foreman. I just didn't think so. Of course, after 8 rounds, George Foreman was no longer the heavyweight champion of the world. Muhammad Ali was. History was made. He was champion once again. And who was at his side? Don King. Promoter Don King. Of course, from that point forward, Don has been a mainstay in the world of professional boxing, a mainstay in the world at large. Of course, a media giant, an icon, call him what you want. But it was one point in time where Don King stepped across the line. And he messed with the dude he shouldn't have messed with. I'm talking about John Gotti. Remember John Gotti? He's dead now, but he was like the Teflon Don, they called him out in New York City. Of course, he beat all those trials. He would go to jail he would go to court on murder charges and robbery charges and racketeering charges, and he would beat them all. That's why they called him the Teflon Don, until they rolled him up on a bug. Once they bugged that place above his little athletic club there, his little social club there, once they bugged that place, he was done. But the bottom line is, John Gotti had a right hand by the name of Sammy the Bull Gravano. Now, the Bull Gravano, of course, was put in a position where he was either going to be killed or he had to rat on John Gotti. So, John Gotti put a word out to kill Sammy Gravano because he thought Sammy was bad on him. Sammy said, you know what? I'm not going to jail for you. I'm not getting killed. The bottom line was Sammy turned government witness. At one point in time, Sammy and Don King had a relationship. What was the relationship like? Let's hear it from Sammy.
Boxing, gambling. Did you guys ever do anything with Don King? Any contacts with Don King?
Yes. I went in front of a grand jury. I was subpoenaed in front of a grand jury for boxing. When I was there, I was out with John Gotti. Mike Tyson was the shit. Now, I had another guy, and I can't think of his name. I knew the trainer, and I knew the black guy. I was training in the gym with him occasionally. He was a tough fighter, and he was a little bit over the hill. So I thought of a thing to set up a fight. I wanted him, and someday I'll get the name. I can't remember right now, but I'll get him to fight the champ in Italy. The champ in Italy was with two brothers who were both made guys in the mob. So I'm reaching them through the Italian people. I want this guy to come in and fight my guy, the black guy. And my guy will win. So he gets your belt. So if he wins and he has your belt, I want to hook up a fight with Mike Tyson. And I want big money because it's a championship. He's got a belt. You got a belt. The numbers are bigger. We know that Mike could probably beat you. Now, if the people around Mike want to make him duck a fight, I don't think he would do that. But then it's another story. But we never got that far. The Italian guy had to come here and fight a lesser opponent first before he fought my guy. And he lost to that guy. So now the thing is off. But in the process of all of this, John knows what's going on. I have a guy, a street guy, can't even think of his name, but he's going to Don King talking about a potential fight. He's not having a lot of luck. Don King stands up. He don't want no part of this thing. He mentions John Gotti, this, that. I'm a tough guy. I went to jail for this and that. John, I'm not doing any of that bullshit. So the kid comes back and tells me. So I said, John, forget the whole thing now. It ain't going to work. He won't do it. Don King won't do what we want. Did you tell him to mention my name? Yeah, I did. He don't want to be bothered. He said he's a tough guy. He did time. Really? Yeah. Tell the kid to go back, make another appointment, and kill him. You want me to kill Don King? No, not you. The kid, this guy. You want me to tell this kid to go back and kill Don King? Yeah, well, hit him with a proposal. If he says no, take a gun out and shoot him. All right. That's what you want? Yeah. All right. I grabbed the kid. He was in the kid. He's a guy, you know. It was tough. Listen, you're going to go, you're going to hit him with this proposal. If he says no and gives you that shit, I'm a tough guy, take the gun out and shoot him. Shoot him in the head. Kill him. You want me to kill Don King? I said, it's not me. John wants you to kill him. What do you want me to tell you? You got to kill him. He took off. The kid took off. I'd never seen hide a hair of him again. He must have left the country. I don't know where the he went. He took off. So we never went after Don King because I didn't want. I'm definitely not going after him because this is insane now. We're hitting the guy because he don't want to do a deal. We'll be hitting guys every other week.
Sammy the Bull Gravano talking about the hit on Don King. Yeah, they put a hit on him, man. The guy says, I'm not going to do it. I couldn't blame him. But the bottom line is Don King came, of course, probably more closer times for Don in his life as far as his confronting death was concerned. I'm not talking health-wise. I'm talking about in the street. Of course, in 1967, he stomped a guy to death by the name of Sam Garrett. Sam owed him some money, I think $600 in a numbers racket, and Don was stomping on him, and the guy says the last thing the guy says to him before Don gives him that final stomp was, Don, I'll pay you the money, and here come the cops running, and Don kicks him that one final time in the head and killed him. Of course, that's what Don King went to jail for, and of course, a few years later, he was pardoned, and he spent 3 years and 11 months in prison for that. In 1983, he was eventually pardoned by then Ohio Governor James A. Rhodes. So that wasn't the only guy he killed. In 1954, Don King shot a guy in the back. I kid you not. The guy robbed his little numbers racket. You know, like Don's got this gambling racket going on, I said, in the basement of that record store there in Cleveland, Ohio. And some guy comes in and robs him. And the guy turns around. Don't turn your back on Don King. Not with a gun. He turned his back on Don King, got shot in the back. Of course, said Don killed him. So they charged him with they were going to charge him initially with homicide and or manslaughter, but decided, nah, we're not going to do that. But anyway, he's been charged with killing two people. And of course, there's other people that he said he's killed financially. But at the end of the day, he's 89 years old. He's still rocking and rolling. He's still like the king of promotion as far as old school boxing is concerned. In fact, some of these guys here in the current era could learn a thing or two from Don King. We'll go with Don King Christmas at about 40 minutes past the hour. Of course, him giving you his holiday wishes. Before that, we're talking boxing and mixed martial arts on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
I love the way that you walk, the way that you talk. Really knocks me out, girl. The clothes that you wear, the style of your hair, the way that you fare. Under all conditions, your mind. Gone by in round one.
Holly lands with a combination with not too much power. Is dancing more springly. And a good solid combination by Holly Ruggiero, but he comes back. Holly is faster here in round one than we've seen him in his previous rounds against Mathis, against Mike Buster, and against Jimmy Ellis. Muhammad Ali apparently in love with the condition he is now in, just wants to fight up to the top of his medal. Moving like we've never seen him in a first round of any of his fights. He was 213, I think, in his fight with Sonny Liston. The first or second time, sure. And it was best. Ali threw one good combination. They are fighting the 5-point must system, as you know. Outside of that, Shivalo has not been hit very hard and has not landed too much back in victory. 30 seconds remaining in round one. Still trying to cut off Holly. And now a good shot of the ball. And good falling by Shivalo. Shivalo with a good rally. Enough to even up the round. And Holly now trying to win it back with that strong left hand. Holly allowed himself to be back into the corner, and Shivalo said anytime he goes into a room or into a corner, I'll be there.
So here I am at the International Boxing Hall of Fame, upstate New York, with George Shivalo. He's like 300 pounds at this point in time. He's fat. He's fat as a pig. Not anymore. He's slim and trim now, but this is like 15, 20 years ago, maybe longer than that, early 90s. And he orders 5 orders of shrimp. In other words, a shrimp, each order is like 20 shrimp, okay? And he orders like 100 shrimp. And I'm blown away by this guy's going to eat all this food for him. I've never seen anybody eat like that. He was like a professional eater. Anyway, the bottom line is at the end of the night, he ate a lot of shrimp, told some good stories. 73-18 as a pro. 2 draws, only was stopped 2 times by George Foreman and Joe Frazier. Of course, the 2 fights with Ali, the first fight in 1966. The fight you heard was from 1972. Of course, Ali winning the distance fights both times. And you know, when I talked to George and he and I sat down a couple of times, not outside of Canada. It's fun to have. Anytime you go to Canada, you got to go. Why? If you go to Montreal or anything like that, if you go to Canada, you're going to try to hook up with some of these Canadian icons. Of course, George Shivalo, as far as boxing is concerned, nobody suffered more tragedy and triumph at the same time. I mean, he had like, I think, two or three of his family members committed suicide. It's just ugly. He was just ugly as hell. But George prevailed, and George came through it. And, you know, George would tell me that Ali was the greatest athlete he ever faced in his life, the greatest person he ever faced. And I know what he felt. I know what he meant because, you know, I think Johnny Sig said, or somebody said, it may have whoever it was, but when Ali touches you, or when you spend time with Ali, he sort of makes you a better person. I mean, you know, sometimes I think about some of the nasty things I want to do to people and this and that, and I remember Ali saying in the background, be cool. Be cool. I mean, if Muhammad Ali said be cool to you, you would take things a little cooler than you do. But the 2 fights with Joe Frazier, of course, the 3 fights with Joe Frazier for Muhammad Ali, the punishing third fight, the thrill of Manila in 1975, people say maybe it was the greatest heavyweight fight of all time as far as the championship was concerned. Of course, the give and take for 14 rounds before Eddie Futch stepped in to stop that fight wouldn't allow Joe to go any further. Eddie and I talked about that, and like Eddie told Joe, you got nothing to be ashamed of, son. I'm about to stop this fight because you're taking too much of a beating. Of course, my 2 buddies, Muhammad Ali and Eddie Futch, both in the same paragraph, I'm doing pretty good. And somebody said to me, somebody shot me a text, what is the 5-point must system? It's the same thing as a 10-point must system. It's only 5 points. In other words, 5 points to the winner, 4 or less to the loser. In other words, in the 10-point must system, which they use primarily in the sport of boxing nowadays, okay, it's 10 points to the loser, 9 or less to the 10 points to the winner, 9 or less to the loser. And occasionally a round will go 10-10, but for the most part, rounds are 10-9. They use the same scoring in mixed martial arts, per se. It's like effective aggressiveness, you know, effective striking, and octagon generalship. In boxing, it's, you know, effective aggressiveness, clean punching, ring generalship, and defense. They don't give you too much credit for defense in the world of mixed martial arts. Speaking of MMA, it's dead. Stick a fork in it. I mean, Dana White could talk all the smack that he wants, but unless he's putting on events with big stars, people don't give a smack. And he hasn't got any big stars. At the end of the day, I think he's, John Jones isn't campaigning for him. Henry Cejudo decided he was going to retire. I don't hear Amanda Nunes talking about any fights this any time real soon. So he really doesn't have any iconic fighters. I mean, he's trying to dig GSP. George St. Pierre is trying to dig him out of retirement to get him to come back to fight somebody. At the end of the day, it ain't happening. It ain't happened. Israel Adesanya is the UFC or the MMA fighter of the year. I think you got to give him some props, the welterweight champion. Of course, the guy's beating everybody he was supposed to beat, and beating some guys he wasn't supposed to beat. So I guess Israel does deserve that honors. Is Brock Lesnar coming back to MMA? Brock Lesnar is done with MMA. I mean, let Brock do his thing in the world of professional wrestling. That's a tough, you know, people think that's like for a bunch of wussies in professional wrestling. You know, if you're putting on a good act and you're doing a good job as far as pro wrestling is concerned, you're taking a beating every week. You just are. I mean, it's not like, you know, I know it's fake fighting and it's choreographed and this and that, but professional wrestling, they take a beating. That's why those guys want to have those light schedules. That's why Brock Lesnar only wants to wrestle once in a while, because of the fact that it's just too much wear and tear on the body. I mean, I remember Roddy Piper telling me out at the Cow Palace, I said, what's the toughest part about professional wrestling? He said, being on the road. I said, what do you mean being on the road? He goes, it's every day. It's a different city. Every day it's a different city. Every day it's a different world, different hotel room, different food. You can't think he's going. It's hard to keep your life together. And of course, Roddy Piper, the rowdy one, Roderick Coombs was his born name, of course, spent some time with me out at the Cow Palace. I remember when I brought a couple of kids that were winners of an art contest I did at Bryan Elementary School when I was a San Francisco policeman. We did this art contest in conjunction with KEMO-TV. In fact, James Gabbert was the owner of KEMO-TV20. And he said to me, you know, I'll sponsor one of your contests. You want to put this together, this anti-graffiti contest? I did. These two Asian kids won, and we took them out to the Cow Palace for this WWE event. It was WWF then. And Roddy Piper volunteered. They sent a word up to the dress room that these two students were downstairs, and they had won these awards, and guess who came down to take a picture with them? Roddy Piper and the Road Warriors. I mean, these kids were like, the kid was shaking. The little kid was shaking. The Road Warriors are like the baddest bad guys in all of wrestling at that point in time. I mean, these guys would scare the snot out of you. I remember when the Road Warriors and did something with, I think, the Sheik out of the Cow Palace. The Sheik got me out of my seat. He came at me one time. I got up and ran. I thought it was for real. The Road Warriors, they were that type of presence. Anyway, the Road Warriors were so cool. They came down. They took pictures with these kids. Roddy Piper took pictures with these kids. The kids will never forget it. They've got the Polaroid pictures, I know, no doubt about that, and will hold on to them for the rest of their life. That was a special night. Roderick Coombs, he was a class act. May he rest in peace. Roddy Piper, too much cocaine. That's what ended his life early. That's why we had the heart disease. A lot of these guys, Rick Rude. Ooh, Rick Rude. Somebody asked me the other day, Rick Rude, that was your favorite professional wrestler. Yes, he was my favorite kayfabe type of guy. But he did something with Viagra. He evidently shot some Viagra, some type of performance-enhancing you-know-what into his actual member down there. And then the doctors told him they were going to cut it off. I kid you not, they were going to sever his member. And he decided he was going to kill himself, so I think he took that overdose that night of somas. When he woke up the next morning, there was no morning to wake up to. He was dead. I'm talking about Rick Rude. That's how Rick Rude died. Rick Rude evidently, allegedly, I'll say it allegedly, because two people have told me, that he was shooting Viagra into his actual genitalia. And by doing that with some type of performance-enhancing drug, he got an infection down there, and they were going to have to sever his member. I kid you not, I wanted to repeat that because somebody said to me the first time, people aren't going to believe that. Yes, they are. That was the end of Rick Rude. That's why Rick Rude ended up going that night, going home, going to bed in that hotel room, of course, taking those somas and just going off into another world because he didn't want to live without his biggest thing. And that was Rick Rude's claim to fame. The fact that, you know, he walked into the ring looking like John Holmes, a professional wrestling. Of course, a married guy, a guy that took things seriously, never took off his wedding ring in the professional wrestling ring for the most part. I'm talking about Rick Rude. Of course, died going out the wrong way, baby. Damn! You don't shoot Viagra anywhere like that. I mean, think about that. Just think about that. Don King on the other side of the break talking the holidays. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
More of Ring Talk
with Pedro Fernandez.
Don, a very good morning to you, sir.
A very good morning to you, Pedro. It's just a delight, first of all, to all your fans and listeners, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and Happy New Year.
Oh, Don, you and I have been doing this a long time together, haven't we?
Yes, we have, you know what I mean? And we'll continue to do it, you know what I mean? It's a long time to come, you know what I mean? So spiritually, forever.
Okay, good enough. Let's get the negs out of the way. We lost great Peyton Scherer this year. I mean, I know he was 90 years old, but it was a shock to me. I talked to him about 10 days, 2 weeks before, and he was feeling fine, and then boom, he was gone.
Well, you know, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. I'm just so delighted that I had the opportunity to share life with Peyton Scherer. He was a divine individual and a great, great boxing man.
And, Don, you lost one of your right hands from Cleveland, didn't you, about a month and a half ago?
Yes, we have. I lost a good woman that was just tremendous, and I'm fighting for women's rights. Her name was Constance Hopper, and she was the editor of one of my newspapers, but a lifelong friend. Went to school together. So it was just a one of those things, but I celebrate her life because she was 81 years old, and she did such a tremendous job fighting for freedom, justice, and equality for the women as well as the men, for all people. She symbolized that one land, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And so she was a dear friend, and she's gone, but she's on the money right now up there, still working and prodding along to make things happen for a better America.
And justice for all, one of your famous quotes, are you surprised that there is so much protest and unrest in here in 2014? It seems like we're in the 60s again, Don.
No, I'm not surprised. I can't say that. This is a way of life that has been developed, Pedro, that has got four centuries involved in it. And so we have to do is the system that permits these type of acts to come about is what we must change. You know, we always treat the effects. We do not treat the cause. The cause is that we fought for freedom and liberty from King George and then turn around and did the same thing to a class of people that King George was doing to them. The women do not get their rights no matter what they say or do, and the only symbols, Pedro, of slavery was in coinciding with the woman and with the people of color. So therefore, they were both considered inferior. They were considered property, and this residence is still there. And so until we work together, come together, believe in this country in the essence of what it stands for, one land, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, it's going to be unrest until that time. So let us try to change that thing and make this thing the self-evident truth that all men and women are created equal and then endowed by the higher force, the Lord, with the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
You know, Don, you know I spent 8 years with the San Francisco Police Department, and I know what it's like to get in nasty situations. But the bottom line is I think the mentality of policemen across the country was they got away from hiring streetwise guys like me and went to hiring college degree guys where there's only a white and a black and there's no gray area, when in the world of police work and law enforcement, it's all about gray.
You know, you're absolutely correct in that statement, but you have to understand also that the policemen, before they get to be policemen, they're taught. And they're taught that one class of people is inferior to another. It's the same thing that comes up. And so, therefore, when they do get the power and they get a position of life and death in their hands, they forget about what it is and they result to what they've been brought up with all along and throughout their life. You got to be able to go to the cause, man, and you got to be able to enlighten people, educate people as to what the effects of life is and how it is and how we all going to live together because we are brothers keeper, whether we want to be or not. And so I think that, you can see the same thing happening in Nevada and Las Vegas when the corporate people get in. These are kids that have been grown up and they learn accountability and responsibility. But they don't have no gray area, and if it ain't dotted on the adding machine, it don't add up. You know what I mean? But you got to be able to deal with people and respect their culture, their background, their upbringing. Then you can try to find a way, the means to change things that could not be changed if you're just gonna go over it and make it hammer and nail, black and white, hit me on the head. But what hurts us in the police department is that they can do it with impunity. You know what I mean? There's no consequences. So this is what you got to understand. We cannot have that power of life and death. That is supposed to be only endowed to our maker, our creator, our Lord and Savior.
The great Don King. What more can I say? Don, now you've come back into the spectrum as far as the heavyweight division is concerned with the heavyweight champion. Of course, we're talking about Burmeister Vern. How's he doing these days? Well, what's life treating him? How's life treating him? Is he happy being champion? Does he feel like...
Yes, you know what? He's a great guy. You know, he's a great guy. You know, he's got to be able to work hard and dedicate himself. He's coming from the struggle, as Frederick Douglass would say, without struggle, there's no progress. You mean you must be able to deal with what is real, and he's going to be a people's champion. I'm looking forward to great things from him. So I'm going to help him in that way, every way that I can. And the heavyweight boxing is a return to glory of America. And it makes me feel good to be part and parcel of the heavyweight championship match in May 10th at USC. And now a heavyweight championship match will be in Las Vegas, the capital of boxing, at the MGM Grand under the auspices of Richard Stern, the president of entertainment, who is doing a remarkable job. And you have to give credit to this guy named Steven Espinoza, who got this job was dropped in his lap, and with the exile of Ken, and now Steven Espinoza is doing a remarkable job of putting this thing together and bringing the old glory back to this great nation of America. So I'm looking forward to that fight with great anticipation. I want all your fans to reach out and touch a friend. Tell them about it. Be there. If you can't be there live and on the scene, then check it out on the screen on Showtime. It's going to be a fabulous, fabulous evening of boxing with Bermaine Stervain and Deontay Warrior. Wilder, I should say. And he's got 32 wins, 32 knockouts. That's a perfect record, you know what I mean, for whatever he was doing and whoever he was fighting. And so Bermaine has come from the struggle himself, you know, and he is the champion of the world, the heavyweight champion of the world. Now he got to imitate and emulate the Mike Tysons and the Holyfields and the great, inimitable Ali.
Okay. I watch, you know, styles make fights, and the young man fights with a low left hand. I don't know if that's the greatest way to fight a guy that's 6'7". I guess he's going to adapt to the opponent, won't he?
Well, you know what? The strategy is it remains with them and how they do. I agree. Larry Holmes is one of the greatest champions of all times, and Larry Holmes also said on that point, you know what I mean, to lift that left hand up, you know, to make certain that you don't get hit with that right hand. And so it's going to be an interesting fight, and that's been brought to his attention. So I think he'll be able to adapt to the situation. I'm looking for a blazing knockout, and as he said on a conference call the other day, don't blink.
Okay.
And so that's going to be heralded as the remark of the year. You know what I mean? Don't blink. You know what I mean? So you don't have an opportunity to go and get some popcorn or go get a beer or go whatever you're going to get. You got to stay there and stay glued to this thing until it is over, because if you move, you lose.
Okay. What happened to the amateur boxing program here? Frank Warren's got the UK to invest in their amateur program over there, and they've got some bright amateur stars that have turned professional and won some titles in the past decade. But it doesn't seem like the United States seems to be investing in the future of boxing, Don. Am I right or am I wrong on that?
Well, you know what? We got to you know, reconnoiter our efforts, you know what I mean, and deal with it as real. You are right. We got to make some. We used to have ABC's Wide World of Sports, Showtime Sports, you know what I mean, NBC, First in Color with Sports. Now they don't have it. They just go directly to the boxers without being known. Up close and personal is one of the most vital things of the boxing. They're trying to emulate and imitate it on the 24/7 and whatever other programs that they come in with, All Access. But there's nothing like putting time and effort with the ABCs of boxing, the young kids, taking them off the streets and out of the gangs and things, and teaching them, educating, enlightening, and also teaching them physical prowess and they can escape the destitution and the poverty, you know, by the prowess of their physical skills as well as the enlightenment of their mind. This I want to work for, and this I will work with, and I will call on you and all of the Americans to let us put time and investment into our youth, because that's where it is. That's tomorrow's future.
Okay. Don King's our guest, of course, celebrating. How long has it been, Godfather? 30, 35 years, 40 years now in boxing, or what?
Yes, about that time in boxing, you know what I mean, bringing boxing to the people. And what we're doing right now is we're returning boxing to the people, which is the most important. You know, I'm a promoter of the people, by the people, and for the people, and my magic lies in my people ties. The people are the most important, you know what I mean? So, therefore, we must be able to promote them. You know, unanimity, solidarity, and togetherness is what my goal is. And I live for the day that all people are clothed in dignity. So we got to continue to work toward that effort. And for the 40 years that I've been in this sport with the inimitable and incomparable Muhammad Ali, it has been the reward is in the journey. And this has been quite a journey. So I'm 83 years old right now, and I feel just as good as I can be because I'm talking to who? What that guy's name? Fernando? What is your name, sir? You are so bright. You're so intelligent, gentlemen. You're so electrifying. And I get myself caught up in that kind of thing. That's why you got me at any moment, a day or night, you catch me, I can't not hang up the phone.
You know what, Don? You are the godfather of boxing promotion, the greatest promoter of all time. And you've always been there for Pedro. You have. You've been there for Pedro, whether it was TV work, whether it was radio as a guest. You've always been there for me. And I love you for that, man. And you've been good to me. And I think that if Don King had more of a control of today's boxing, I think boxing would be a lot better because I miss those cards with 5, 6, 7 title fights. And I think the boxing fans do, too.
You know, that's what they want to give the people. You cannot go and rely on one championship match. Everyone's a championship match, and therefore they always feel that they're not being beat out of their money or wasting their time and viewing. You know, they now become so sanitized and monetized that they want to just be able to deal with what the facts are. How's the cash register going to ring? Well, the cash register can't ring if you don't have the support of the people. They don't seem to understand that. You give the people what they want, they will respond. When is the next one?
I got to give you I got to give you props, another great interview, but I got to go running up on a heartbreak. I love you. Take care. Happy holidays.
Happy New Year, Pedro. Merry Christmas, and I love you and all your fans. God bless America, and God bless our great president, Obama. So let's move on forward, and let's keep on keeping on.
Don King on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
The Isley Brothers. Who's that lady? Who's that young lady that sent me that Christmas ornament? I'm talking about Juliet Isla out of Kentucky. She sent me a Christmas tree ornament. We have it hanging on the Ring Talk microphone right now, so we want to thank her from the bottom of our hearts for that great present. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look in the world of boxing, the future of boxing, on display next week, January 2nd, live in the Zone. I'm talking about Ryan Garcia. King Rye, call him what you want. I call him King. Bottom line is 20 and zip, 17 KOs, coming off that one-punch knockout. Bang! Over Francisco Fonseca, of course. Fonseca come into the fight 25-2. And a few seconds later, he was like in another time zone. That's what's going to happen to Luke Campbell. Campbell's a tough guy. Lost that one fight to, he's 20-3, but lost that one big fight to Vasyl Lomachenko, of course, over 12 rounds in 2019. Lomachenko, not the fighter people think he is. In fact, now Devin Haney is talking about wanting to fight Teofimo Lopez. Of course, Lopez not going to give Vasyl Lomachenko a rematch because of the fact that there's not a whole lot of money in that rematch. Probably more risk than there is money, but I still think that the way for Teofimo to go is to go over to Australia, fight Albrassus, George over there, fight Georgie, make some big money, make $3 or $5 million, come back and, you know, make some more money here. But according to his father, he wants $10 million to fight Teofimo Sr. Fields. His son is worth $10 million because he holds all the belts. He wants to fight, of course, the Devin Haney. Devin Haney has a WBC belt. The promoter Barry Hearn is saying that Haney's not a champion. And of course, Haney's saying he is a champion. Of course, Teofimo saying that Haney's an internet champion. The bottom line is these guys need to look it out. At 135 pounds, we have a chance to have a round robin tournament with some outstanding fighters. And January the 2nd, you're going to see the best of the best, I think, when he steps out and he takes, I'm telling you, Ryan Garcia's going to make Luke Campbell look like a stiff. He's going to stop him. Probably inside of 6 or 7 rounds. And if he doesn't, as I said earlier, I will eat it. If he loses, if Luke Campbell beats Ryan Garcia, Scott Cuddy's my witness, and so are the millions of people listening live and delayed, I will eat an 8x10-inch piece of paper on the air. On the air, I will eat an 8x10-inch piece of paper on the air if Luke Campbell can beat Ryan Garcia next week. It ain't going to happen. I've never eaten the 8x10-inch piece of paper on the air. Of course, I've been doing this 37, make that 38-plus years now. And the only time I came close was a Holyfield, I think, Riddick Bowe fight or something like that. Yeah, where Jeannie Richards or Jeannie Williams, one of the judges, scored a draw. Bottom line is it was a draw, and I didn't have to eat the paper because of that. But outside of that, I've been sterling, perfect, over 37 to make that 38 years now. So is this the time where I eat the 8x10-inch piece of paper? Is this my comeuppance? Is this the final? Am I going to get it? Nah, I'm not going to get it. I'm telling you, he's the real deal. Ryan Garcia, watch for that name. I think he will be a boxing superstar for years to come. Forget the fact that he's got the 3 or 4 million girls following him on Instagram and that kind of good stuff. That just means when he goes to pay-per-view, and eventually he will go to pay-per-view, okay, that people will be buying his fights. The chicks will buy his fights. If you can get women, listen, if women want to watch his fights, much like they do with Oscar De La Hoya, God knows the roof is the limit. And he doesn't, how can I put this? Oscar did not have the grab on the chicks that Ryan has as far as the 2.5 or the 3 million Instagram followers. I kid you not. I mean, De La Hoya was popular, but when De La Hoya turned pro in 1992 after winning the gold medal, the internet was just coming into fruition. I mean, I remember sending an email to Caesar's Palace one time and them sending me an email back. We don't take email. I kid you not. Put it in a regular mail. That's what Debbie Munch told me, the vice president of Caesar's Palace, told me. Send it in a regular mail, Pedro. She sent me the email back to tell me that. She sent me an email to tell me, send it to her regular mail. Now, we don't even use regular mail, per se. Although we missed the post office. God knows. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. 37. Make that 38 plus years. Now you're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, my producer, the one, the only, incomparable Scott Cutty, will be gone for a week. We wish him the very best. We'll be back, of course, in a fortnight. Straight up, this has been Ring Talk Live Worldwide for Sunday, December 27, 2020. I thank you so much for taking part of today's show. Of course, if you're joining us for the very first time today, let me welcome you to the Ring Talk family. You've been here for a while. You know what's going on. Straight up, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Until next time, peace, love, and a ton of respect.